You're listening to the Plain Bible Teaching Podcast. Thanks for joining us today.
Thank you for tuning in to the newest episode of the Plain Bible Teaching Podcast. I'm your host, Andy Soaker. This episode is being released on September 5th, 2024. And this week, we're talking about Christians and voting. This is an election year here in the United States, so people are talking a lot about who or what to vote for. And it is certainly a great privilege to be able to vote and to hopefully influence the direction of the country and leaders of it. But as Christians, how should we vote? We're going to consider a few things in our episode today. For links to some related materials, check out the show notes for this episode at plainbibleteaching.com/podcast/090524. Now for our discussion this week. If you're listening to this episode on the day it is released, then we are 2 months away from Election Day in the United States. And naturally, there's a lot of discussion about the various candidates and the possible implications that might come from this election. However, our discussion today is not about any specific candidates who may be running for office. I'm also not going to be endorsing any political party or candidate here today. Instead, my hope is that what we discuss here today will be relevant in the future for whoever might be running for office in any election that may come as long as this country is still holding elections. So there are a few things I want us to consider today. First, before we talk about how a Christian should vote, I want to ask this question. Should Christians vote? Some advocate for Christians being completely uninvolved with the government, which includes participating in elections or voting. David Lipscomb was a big advocate of this. Lipscomb was maybe the most influential preacher among Churches of Christ in the South in the years that followed the Civil War. And he wrote this in the preface to his book about civil government. It took but little thought to see that Christians cannot fight, cannot slay one another or their fellow men at the behest of any earthly ruler, or to establish or maintain any human government. But if he cannot fight himself, can he vote to make another fight? What I lead or influence another to do, I do through that other. The man who votes to put another in a place or position is in honor bound to maintain him in that position, and is responsible for all the actions, courses, or results that logically and necessarily flow from the occupancy and maintenance of that position. A man who votes to bring about a war, or that votes for that which logically and necessarily brings about war, is responsible for that war and for all the necessary and usual attendants and results of that war. Now, in that quote, Lipscomb was focused on one issue, war, particularly the Civil War, and he argued that one who voted for a war, or for a course that would lead to war, was just as responsible as one who was directly fighting in that war. So then the question comes up, well, could a Christian just vote to prevent war? Well, Lipscomb continued. But some may say, it is a Christian's duty to vote against war and against that which will produce war. Yes, but how can he know which course will or will not bring about war? Many men voted for the secession of the states South with a view that that was the only way to prevent war. Some thought separation, as between Abraham and Lot's families, would end the strife that would be interminable within the Union. Others thought, argued, and voted, if the southern states show a united front, there will be no war. If we are divided, the division will invite war. So voted for secession to avoid war. And of course, we see from history what actually happened, that the secession led to the war between the states, or the Civil War. So he advocated that Christians just stay out of it altogether and not participate in voting. Now, there's a compelling case to be made for Christians not serving in some capacity in the government, whether in the military or in elected office or in some bureaucratic role or something like that. I'm not saying I agree with that, but I understand the argument. However, to me, voting is different. When someone votes, they're not becoming part of the government or acting as an agent of the state. Instead, they're just trying to influence the leaders to the degree that their vote allows them to do that. And provided that there is a reasonable expectation that we can exert some influence in that way, then I think it's good for Christians to participate in that. But for those who cannot vote in good conscience, I'm not going to try to guilt them into voting. So for the rest of our discussion here today, I want to focus on some considerations for those of us who believe that Christians can vote. So how should we vote? Well, the first question that may naturally come up is, should we vote for someone based on their character? Yes and no. Well, what do I mean by that? Well, obviously, character is important. The wise man said, when the righteous increase, the people rejoice. But when a wicked man rules, people groan. However, we also need to remember that we are not voting for elders in the local church, men who need to be above reproach and blameless, as is outlined in 1 Timothy chapter 3 and Titus chapter 1. We won't go into those qualifications here for elders, but keep in mind that those qualifications were for men who would serve in the local church, in those leadership positions as shepherds of the flock, not for those who would serve in civil authorities. Again, it doesn't mean that character is not important, but it is going to be different. So what we are voting for, if we vote, are for those who will, among other things, be able to strike fear in the one who does what is evil. Remember what Paul said about the role of civil authorities in Romans chapter 13. For rulers are not a cause of fear for good behavior, but for evil. Do you want to have no fear of authority? Do what is good and you will have praise from the same. For it is a minister of God to you for good. But if you do what is evil, be afraid. For it does not bear the sword for nothing. For it is a minister of God, an avenger who brings wrath on the one who practices evil. That's who we're voting for. Now, incidentally, this is one reason why some believe that Christians cannot serve in the government. We are to be, as Jesus said in Matthew chapter 10 and verse 16, harmless as doves. Yet rulers, according to the wise man in the book of Proverbs, are to drive the threshing wheel over the wicked. Those who serve as rulers need to be willing and able to punish those who do what is evil. So when we think about how a Christian should vote, we need to start with what God has ordained for civil authorities. A Christian's vote should be for those who most closely follow the biblical model of the divinely given role for civil authorities. So what does God want the civil authorities to do? Not what we might want, what does God want them to do? Well, first, they are to punish evildoers. We already talked about this verse in Romans chapter 13, that rulers are not a cause of fear for good behavior, but for evil, that they are a minister of God who bring wrath on the one who practices evil. This is one of the things God set up. This is why government is there, is to punish evildoers. And with that, God ordained them to protect the innocent. That is implied in that verse in Romans chapter 13, as they punish those who do what is evil. They are, by extension, protecting those who are innocent, protecting those who may be harmed by the ones who would do evil. The way they do that is by punishing evildoers, and not just to punish the ones who actually do the evil, but to deter others from committing similar crimes. Notice what the wise man said in the book of Ecclesiastes. Because the sentence against an evil deed is not executed quickly, therefore the hearts of the sons of men among them are given fully to do evil. By punishing the wicked, they are also deterring other people from doing the same thing. By doing both of those things, they are protecting those who are innocent. And then number three, God expects civil authorities to provide and maintain an environment in which we are free to carry out the responsibilities that God has given us. Paul told Timothy in 1 Timothy chapter 2, "First of all, then, I urge that entreaties and prayers, petitions and thanksgivings be made on behalf of all men, for kings and for all who are in authority, so that we may lead a tranquil and quiet life in all godliness and dignity." In other words, pray for civil authorities that they will leave us alone and allow us to do the will of God without hindrance. So it stands to reason that if Christians are to vote, we should first consider who will fulfill the role that God has given to civil authorities, to punish evildoers, to protect the innocent, and to maintain a free environment for its people. Now, another consideration is this. What about those that we might think would help turn this into a Christian nation? Well, first of all, there is no such thing as a Christian nation. God's people, Christians, are described in 1 Peter 2 and verse 9 as a holy nation. They are God's special people. Now, along these same lines, we also hear about the separation of church and state. From a biblical perspective, God expects those two entities to be separate from one another. One has the task of helping to save man from his sins, which is the church. The other has the task of restraining those who would harm others in their sin, which is the state. Now, often those on the right, who are religiously and politically conservative, are portrayed as ones who are wanting to make this a Christian nation. And lately we hear a lot about Christian nationalism, whatever that is. Yet this can also be manifested by those on the left in a different way, by calling for government to do what God has told us to do. Now we need to remember that the state is not to spread the gospel. God has given that work to the church. 1 Timothy 3:15 says the church is the pillar and support of the truth, not the state. That is the work of the church. And also, God did not give the state the work or the role of helping those who are in need. That is for us to do. James 1:27 says, "Pure and undefiled religion in the sight of our God and Father is this, to visit orphans and widows in their distress and to keep oneself unstained by the world." Not to keep the nation unstained, keep ourselves unstained. And that is the one who is to help those who are widowed and orphaned, help those who are in need. That is our responsibility. And there are many things that we might consider good, and they may really be good, but that doesn't mean that the government is the entity that ought to be doing those things. Often, we are the ones who need to do those good things, and the civil authorities would be better off focusing on the role that God has given them that we already talked about. So in summary, how should Christians vote? Now, the New Testament doesn't address this specifically because Christians living in the Roman Empire in the first century didn't have the privilege of voting like we have today. But there are principles that can help us. Whatever we decide, it needs to start with recognizing the role that God has given for civil authorities to punish evildoers, protect the innocent, and to maintain an environment in which we are free to do the will of God without hindrance. So first, we ought to consider those candidates who, based on their principles or by their being able to be persuaded by others, will fulfill that role that God has given them to do. That's all for this week. Thank you for listening to the Plain Bible Teaching Podcast. Hope you found this episode to be helpful. For links to some related materials, check out the show notes for this episode at plainbibleteaching.com/podcast/0905-24. If you have a moment to rate and review the podcast or share with others who may be interested, that is always appreciated. And if you're listening to this, remember that we also upload video versions of the podcast to the Plain Bible Teaching YouTube channel. So if you prefer to watch this on video, that option is there for you. And if you are watching this on YouTube, please like this video and subscribe to the channel so you can see the other videos we post here from time to time. And if you see a news story or have some topic that you think would make for a good discussion here, send that to me at andy@plainbibleteaching.com. Thanks again for listening, and I hope to talk to you again next week.
Thank you for listening to the Plain Bible Teaching Podcast. If you enjoyed this episode, please share it with others. Also, be sure to sign up for the Plain Bible Teaching Weekly Newsletter. This free newsletter will be delivered to your inbox each Friday with articles, podcasts, videos, sermon outlines, and more. Visit plainbibleteaching.com to subscribe today.